Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, Justin. How are you feeling?
Well, everyone analyzes how I respond to you, so today I'm doing well.
They're analyzing this?
Yes.
They used to just analyze me because you were all happy and like, hey, how are you doing, buddy? And I was like, I am okay. And they're like, what's wrong with Aaron? Mm-hmm.
I guess we've switched roles and they can tell there's something wrong with me and what's been wrong with me is 2020, and 2020 is over. So we're turning over a new leaf now and we're trying to do better. That's it.
We're trying.
Anywho, CrimeCon is happening. The one in Austin obviously is happening because it's Texas. And the dates on that are June 4th through 6th. And we're going to the UK also, right?
Yes. And that date was in June, but was now moved to September 25th and 26th. That's in London. And if you want to get a discount on your tickets, use our code, please, GenY21.
Hopefully everybody will be vaccinated by then and life will be grand.
Well, I can speak for myself. I'm looking forward to getting vaccinated.
I got my first shot and I was tired for about a day, had a sore arm, but nothing really outlandish. And after my second shot, I will be volunteering at vaccination sites in Kansas City. I know we do a lot with the podcast, and sometimes you just got to be face-to-face with people to know the good you're doing.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. BODi also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with BODi. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of BODi and save 65%. Just go to BODi.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
So tonight's case, Aaron, we actually put this off a little bit because I was having a rough week and didn't think I was ready for the complexities of it. But let's just say that jealousies and affairs can turn deadly in any situation. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we'll be talking about a couple by the name of Roseanne and Peter Galunas. They lived in Dallas. But their trouble started when they decided to build their dream home. The person who was going to build their dream home, well, he and his wife, once they entered their lives, everything changed. So this happened in Richardson, which is a neighborhood in Dallas, Texas. The families there, they had some money, and these homes are $400,000, $500,000. You might be sneezing at that, but when you understand when this case takes place, it means a little bit more, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was the early 80s. So you pretty much have to double whatever amount, and that would be $1 million home.
Let's talk about these couples. Let's start with Roseanne and Peter Galunas.
Roseanne was a nurse and a mother. Her and Peter had gotten married in 1978. So they'd been married about 4 years before they moved to Dallas. And decided that they're going to move to Texas and build their dream home. Now, Peter was a doctor at UT Southwestern Medical School. He was actually in the process of divorcing her at the time that this goes down. Now, the builder is named Larry Ayler. He owned Ayler Home Construction. He was married to Joy, and they had been happily married, quote unquote, for a while. Joy helped him with his business. They were just a unit. They were a team. But I think both of these marriages might have been a little bit on the rocks at about the time that these two couples came together and Larry was contracted to build their dream home.
So these couples, they were having troubles. That's not really anything that's unique, but when you have two couples coming in close contact with one another and neither couple is exactly happy, things can happen. In this case, Larry took a liking to Roseanne.
That affair seemed to catch on quick, and they tried to keep it under wraps for a while, but it was obvious that neither one of them were happy in their current marriages to jump into this so fast.
And what we understand is Joy wasn't happy with her husband, Larry, because Larry was verbally abusive towards her and was especially hard on her when it came to the finances. He kept a tight rein on their funds.
Yeah, he felt that she was always overspending and she felt like she was being controlled.
Now, one of the things that supposedly was a difficulty in their marriage early on was when Roseanne became pregnant. Of course, he asked her to stop working because he said, "I want you home." So she agreed to that. But he also was upset because he said that he thought he was sterile. He didn't think he could have kids. So this pregnancy was something he just didn't trust.
So obviously, he's suspecting infidelity.
He is, but I think what ends up happening is he realizes he wants the marriage to work, and he's been pretty hard on Roseanne. So what he does is he says, I'm going to build our dream home, and he's hoping that it'll make her happy and make her feel better about being at home, because his work has been doing very well. He's making good money, and he's not home as much anymore. So this dream home is really a way to tie them together in a more concrete way. But this is where they meet Joy and Larry Ayler.
Now, Joy and Larry had been married since 1968 and had been together a few more years past that. They had their own son, and this was a big contract for them. Building this size of home is a lot of money. So Larry jumped at the opportunity. Larry was the type of guy to show off his money. He drove luxury cars. He had a boat. He had a ranch out in the country. He was very flashy. But this is one of those things where he felt all the money was his and he didn't share it with Joy. He got to buy all the toys, and Joy just should have been appreciative that she was along for the ride.
It definitely is two people going in different directions. That's how it's always described. He's flashy, and Joy wasn't really into the money anyway. She was into their son, Chris. He was born in 1970.
Larry was so controlling that he told Joy that she couldn't survive on her own if she ever left him. That's locking her into this marriage, into this relationship. And over time, she seemed to just kind of become disconnected, and she seemed uneasy anytime she was around Larry. And this just is a very poor dynamic for a marriage. Larry, of course, doesn't see anything wrong with this because he's the breadwinner and he's going to make all the decisions.
But Joy's friends, they're concerned because she asks them strange questions like, do you think I'm selfish? And they ask her, like, why would you think that? Well, obviously, it's because Larry has told her, you're selfish, you're stupid.
Yeah. I mean, this is just verbal abuse and gaslighting.
It was in 1982 when Joy underwent surgery to try and make her husband happy. You know, things weren't working very well, and she thought, I'll get this breast augmentation and my husband will like me more.
And that's really sad because she should be doing it for herself. She should be doing it for her own self-confidence, but this is her trying to save the marriage. And again, there is some suspicions here that Larry's not happy with her. And on the other side, Peter is suspecting Roseanne is cheating.
So this home, this dream home, the construction on it began in May of 1983. And that same month, Roseanne moved out of the house that she shared with Peter. Even though this dream home is being built, this couple is parting ways.
They're separated, but they're trying to make their son a priority and not screw up his life as they agree upon divorce terms. Peter and Larry the builder, who's having an affair with Peter's wife, become friends. They go quail hunting together. And one day, Peter, who was suspecting that Roseanne was cheating on him, asked Larry if he thought that Roseanne was seeing another man. And of course, Larry's quick to come back with, no way, she's not that kind of person. But Peter didn't believe him, so he hired a private investigator. And what did he find out, Aaron?
Well, I honestly don't think they needed a private investigator here, but yeah, they found what was probably suspected early on, which is Roseanne and Larry Ayler were having an affair. So of course, now that Peter knows this for sure, he confronts them. They both deny it. They say, nope, you're wrong. But He noticed that Larry was very abrasive and insulting when he was denying it.
Larry had been unhappy with Joy. Larry had been abusive towards her. But as soon as he started having an affair, he didn't seem to be as aggressive, as abrasive, as controlling.
Yeah, people would ask him, "So, what's going on with you?" And they'd hint maybe he and Joy were doing well, but he let them know it was someone else.
Obviously, Roseanne and Peter had filed for a divorce, but now that the cat's out of the bag, Larry ends up filing for a divorce from Joy, just 4 days apart from when Roseanne and Peter were separating. And ironically, Roseanne and Larry would hire the same lawyer, and they both denied the affair. Larry has been caught and starts receiving harassing phone calls. People would hang up, or they would just breathe or say something offensive. Larry believed that these phone calls were coming from his ex-wife, Joy.
Most of Joy's friends didn't know about Larry and Joy's separation, but one of them did, Cherry Bradshaw. And she said that these harassing phone calls, they weren't from Joy to Larry. They were the other way around.
Which, at this point, going off of the personality types, Larry was the abusive one. Joy was the victim in this situation. So it's somewhat believable.
So Larry closes their joint bank account, and it leaves Joy with no funds. This is where maybe desperation comes into play. October 4th, 1983. Something terrible happens just after 6 p.m.
Roseanne is brutally murdered inside of her home. Her four-year-old son would end up finding her. She was stripped of all of her clothing, tied down to her bed, strangled with a belt, and pantyhose were pushed down her throat. She also had two gunshot wounds to her head. This is obviously overkill.
But she was alive. I mean, when the paramedics got there, she was unresponsive but had a pulse. And of course, her son, Peter Jr., was scared. And he met them before they even got in to see his mother, Roseanne. And he pointed to where she was. Roseanne had taught her son how to call his dad in case he needed to get help. And so he called Peter. He said, "Dad, Mom's sick. She won't wake up."
Within 2 days, she's taken off life support. She never regained consciousness. The home showed no signs of forced entry. All the crime scene photos from the home were relatively clean. There was nothing out of order. Nothing was ransacked. Nothing was stolen that they could tell. So with that, Aaron, somebody came into the home and murdered her in the most brutal way, and robbery was not a motive. And the way she was murdered was almost ritualistic. And I think that made the detectives think this could be a serial killer, or this could be just somebody that hated her and wanted her to suffer.
When Peter got there to pick up his son, police asked him, "Would you come in for an interview?" And he said, "With my attorney present." And what do you say to that, Justin? I mean, isn't that what you always tell people?
Yeah. I mean, that's, he did the right thing. I mean, yes, he is the ex-husband who was being cheated on. He is the prime suspect, and he can exercise his rights.
But when he was there, he found out that there was another person there by the name of Larry Ayler, the boyfriend of his ex-wife. And of course, police are looking around thinking, well, we might just have two suspects at the scene already.
I mean, there's this triangle here, and that's exactly what I would be thinking also.
So it's the Richardson Police Department that has this case, and it's Detective Corley who interviewed Peter. Now, Peter said he was expecting his ex to bring Peter Jr. to him. He said he had made multiple phone calls trying to reach her, but he didn't know about anything until his son called him, just as he was taught to. And of course, they want to know, what have you been doing today? They wanted to know his timeline. So he told them, I worked until 5, and at 6, I was waiting for a phone call so I could get my son. But looking over his timeline, they found an obvious gap from 4 p.m. to 4:45. He was alone in his office napping, according to him. But no one could verify that.
He obviously has motive. He was very open with the detectives. He said that he had hired a private detective to look into his wife and her affair. He knew about his wife and Larry. He said he was very upset with them. So this is all coming together for the detectives.
Detective McKenzie interviewed Larry Ayler. Larry did admit to having an affair with Roseanne. And, well, when they met to talk about the house, she had told him she was unhappy in her marriage. And Larry said, basically, same. And that's kind of how their relationship started. And they fell quickly for each other. So they weren't just talking about having an affair. They were talking about getting divorced and then marrying each other. And Larry, he didn't have even as good an alibi as Peter did. He had plans to see Roseanne that afternoon, but she wasn't answering her phone. So he decided to go on a bike ride. And unlike Peter, Larry decided to give the detectives a suspect. He said he finally did it. So Detective McKenzie asked him, what are you talking about? Who are you talking about? And he said, Dr. Galunas finally did it.
He's blaming Peter because that's what makes sense to him.
What's funny here, though, is these detectives that are doing these interviews, they're actually going the opposite directions. You know, McKenzie is thinking, yeah, I think Larry did it. Detective Corley is thinking, eh, Peter did this.
Who has more motive? So I can see it both ways.
On October 5th, 1983, Joy met the detectives at her attorney's office. And she said, Larry told me all about his affair with Roseanne. And she seemed very calm, answered their questions. They have this information, they have the timelines, but what's another tool they can break out, Justin?
Well, they can do that polygraph test and see who's lying, right?
Right. And, you know, I think we've discussed this in the past. We both are kind of iffy on these things, but it is a tool. You might see something. It might help your case. So why not use it, right?
Look at it as more stress during an interrogation, and somebody might break under that stress. But as far as its viability, no, you can throw this thing out.
So this polygraph testing, it doesn't really give them much other than maybe Peter, Larry, and Joy have nothing to do with this crime. Now they start thinking, if you go back to the way that Roseanne was murdered, she was strangled, she had pantyhose shoved down her throat, and she had been shot twice in the head. She was bound. Maybe it was a serial killer. But who stayed connected to this case, Justin?
Larry was definitely the focus here.
He's the one person who contacted the police from time to time asking if there were any updates. So that's kind of interesting. Peter didn't do that. Joy didn't do that. I don't know about you, but just based on that, you would think, maybe he really was into Roseanne. Maybe that's why he's calling.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two ways you can think of it, is he loved and cared about her and he wants justice in this case, or he wants to get updates to see how close the detectives are getting to him.
This murder definitely causes something to happen, which is Larry returns to Joy. And by that Christmas, 1983, people are thinking, wow, they're closer than they ever have been, at least in recent memory.
They seem to be getting along. But it's something weird happens on June 14th, 1986. Joy had asked Larry to meet her out at a ranch to go horseback riding. You know, nice romantic day out. So Larry and his friend Don drove out to the ranch. And he was going to go horseback riding, but Joy was a no-show. And this isn't like her. I mean, if she says, we're going to do this, then that's the plan. So they hang out at the ranch for a little bit, and then they head back down that isolated, twisty road, and they are ambushed by a barrage of gunfire. Somebody lights them up. Larry survives uninjured, but his friend Don gets shot in the arm. The car was full of bullet holes. Larry, thinking, well, Roseanne was murdered. Could this be connected? He calls detectives, like he has been, and asks, does this have anything to do with Roseanne's murder? And detectives are stonewalling him and saying no.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
It's interesting because Joy had filed for a divorce on June 26, 1985, but on January 8, 1986... the divorce attorneys filed a motion to dismiss the case because Joy and Larry, they wanted to keep their marriage together. But after this attack, I think it was about 2 days, and Larry discovered that Joy was involved with a man named Jody Packer. So he files for divorce. And it's on August 19th, 1986, when they are officially divorced. And of course, there's a huge battle over their assets.
Now, during this whole battle, Joy finds a package in her mailbox with a dead fish head.
But she didn't report this to police, Justin, which is odd because I don't know how you take that, but that might be some kind of a threat.
That's how I would take it. I mean, there's the horse head in the bed. There's a fish head in your mailbox. This is pretty foreboding.
There's a message here, but she doesn't report it. Larry does.
Larry moves on with his life, and he will end up marrying a woman named Jan Bell.
Yeah, that happens, but his friends think he's still wishing that he was with Joy instead because he keeps talking about her. And Jan seems a little put off by the way he talks about his ex.
I feel like he might have just wanted to stay with her, but he couldn't take her having an affair on him because, you know, he's a hypocrite. But it ended abruptly, and I think that doesn't sit well with him.
So April of 1988, it's been about 5 years since Roseanne was murdered. There's this mysterious informant that tips the police off. There's a woman claiming to know what happened to Roseanne Galunas. So Detective McGowan says, meet me at midnight at a restaurant.
This is so like film noir, you know, meet me at midnight. Yeah.
So she even comes with a name Just call me Mrs. Mudd.
Sounds like a Primus song.
And then she follows it up by saying, do you know who else I am? I am Joy Ayler's sister, Carol. So she goes on to tell McGowan about how Joy herself told her, I think Larry killed Roseanne Galunis, and I think I'm in danger too. I need your help to hire somebody to kill Larry. So Carol's saying, I agreed to help her because we really felt like she would be killed. So we had to stop Larry.
Well, if Larry had killed Roseanne in such a horrible manner, then they feel their life's in danger. And now we know that it was possibly Joy who ambushed Larry or hired somebody to ambush Larry in that hail of bullets.
Well, this guy that they found was Bill Garland. So Carol paid him $5,000. Not only that, but she ended up marrying him. Bill Garland was basically the guy that would recruit the people that were to kill Larry. He was like the point man. So Bill told Carol, Larry didn't kill Roseanne Galunis. Your sister Joy wanted to kill Roseanne Galunis. And this is where things get really interesting because up to this point, the detective thought, oh, wow, this is all Larry. But as time goes on, this detective's learning that it's Joy who should be the focus here.
Yeah.
The only question here is McGowan kind of wonders if Carol is simply there to collect the reward. There's a reward for information in this case.
She's giving this kind of elaborate tale. Who did it? Somebody hired this guy. Give me the money for the reward. I get it.
They're not really buying it, but it's still the most information they've had in a long time. Some of the problems that this detective had with Carol was that Carol was saying her family was verbally and physically abusive towards her, and that Joy was the favorite child. It was always Carol that would take the blame for any wrongdoing. And they also knew that she had been diagnosed with mental illness and treated at a psychiatric unit in 1970. She had also had the police called on her a number of times for causing disturbances at her home. This involved threatening her ex-husband, Michael Walter, when he was late with child support payments.
Carol's not exactly the most credible witness. And the fact that she's Joy's older sister, but took part in some of this underhanded stuff, but then says Joy was always the favorite and she was abandoned or neglected. It's a lot to take in for the investigators.
Well, and it also reeks of jealousy. Why wouldn't she put this all on her sister? Maybe it was time for her to have some payback. So Carol's not really believed by anybody, but you know, that is the only information that's come in quite some time. I mean, Carol starts off saying that she only saw her family on holidays, and then all of a sudden, in early 1986, Joy starts calling her.
The timing is impeccable.
So this may not be bad information.
So at this point, Carol had told police that Garland, her husband, had put a gun to her head and threatened to kill her and packed up his things and tried to leave Carol. So she called the cops and accused him of assault. When Garland was arrested, Carol had disguised her voice and called Crime Stoppers. She's telling Crime Stoppers, Peter and Larry, that Garland, her husband, was involved in Roseanne's murder. So she's throwing Garland under the bus right now.
So Carol does what Larry says to do, which is go to the police. And McGowan, this is a chance for him to find out how real this is. So Carol agrees to wear a wire and meet Joy at a restaurant. If she's right, maybe she can get Joy to talk about this and they'll get it on tape. And sure enough, on this recording, Joy admits to her involvement in the murder
of Roseanne. That's kind of the gotcha point here is you think it's Peter, you think it's Larry, all these men that were having the affairs, but it was the scorned wife who was cheated on, Joy, who now admits that she's the one that had Roseanne murdered.
Now, this is not unexpected, Justin, but that first recording was too noisy. So the police went to Carol and said, can you do this one more time, but talk to Joy in a quiet hotel room. We need a cleaner recording. And Carol says, sure. And I'll tell you what, if they had any doubts about Carol, those are all sliding away. May 26, 1988, detectives arrest Joy Ehler. They charge her with Roseanne's murder. That same day, Bill Garland was taken into custody. Now, of course, they think Bill Garland's the hitman, but this will get figured out. You know, you said this was kind of a complicated case. It is, because there are all these players. They're being orchestrated by Joy. Detective Morris interviewed Bill Garland, and he was telling the detective that in 1983, a man by the name of Carl Noska contacted him. It was a friend of his, and he said, I know someone who needs help. Bill said, I won't do the job, but I know somebody who could handle it for you, probably. What do you want done? And he was told, we want somebody eliminated. So there are all these people that become involved. Bill Garland hired Brian Kiefel. Kiefel hired a man by the name of Andy Hopper. And when Garland got the payment, he took $2,000 of the $5,000 and passed it down to the others. So these other two guys, they got $1,500 apiece to kill somebody.
Not a lot of money.
So because, of course, this is a chain of people, the people who got money and then passed it down, they know who is in front of them. They know who's beyond them. But of course, this starts to separate everybody from the original orchestrator, from Joy. But Bill Garland admitted, I was involved in this. Joy said they had another job. The name on the piece of white paper, Larry Ehler. So of course, that's when they arrested him.
He's obviously the guy that ambushed Larry and shot up his car and shot his friend.
Now, Joy isn't the kind of person to just admit to everything and give up. She's telling them, I want to go home. And she gets to on a $150,000 bond.
I was going to say, I mean, they give her bond. She makes the bond because she's got money. And what does she do after she walks free?
She flees. But meanwhile, because they do have these confessions, they understand this is a conspiracy. Joy paid Bill Garland to find and hire a hitman. Garland then found this auto mechanic, Brian Lee Kiefel. And of course, he found someone else to help him by the name of Andy Hopper, also known as George Anderson Hopper. Each person made a small amount of money. We're talking $2,000, $1,500, and $1,500. Whenever you've heard someone say, you can have someone killed for not very much money, well, I think this is proof. The police, while they understand Carol has told them a lot of truth here, they also still aren't quite convinced that she wasn't involved. I mean, she did marry the guy that she found to orchestrate the hiring of these killers. There's more here that we need to figure out.
And she has all the information too.
Now, Carol, she says, I tried to get out of the deal, but the police aren't buying it. She also says she tried warning both Joy and Larry, specifically when her husband sent the dead fish head to Joy's home. So there goes one mystery. We know that's solved now. But Carol and Bill had been blackmailing Joy with a story about a girlfriend of one of the hitmen threatening to go to the police. And I imagine this is because, yeah, it wasn't enough money. Not for this type of job. So they were saying, hey, you have to pay this girlfriend off. So Carol claimed Joy paid Bill Garland $12,500 for another hit.
Because we got to just make this worse and worse to silence everybody that could bring them down.
But this girlfriend, this was all made up. That wasn't real, but it was a way to get more money out of Joy. But Carol says she warned Joy about this setup. So there's this question. Maybe Carol knows enough because she was involved, or maybe she's just jealous of Joy, always has been, or maybe she's not involved at all and she's just trying to help police out because she feels Joy should be brought to justice. But the way that the detectives can clear this whole case up is they need to interview everyone they can get their hands on, because they can start to collate the stories. They'll figure this out.
Yeah, they start charging everyone with capital murder. And at that point, when you leverage your suspects with that kind of charge, they're going to start turning on each other. They're going to start saying, no, 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 I wasn't that involved. So-and-so was the kingpin. Joy was the one that told us what to do. And they all start to distance themselves from this.
I like how you said that, because if we went through every freaking story that was told by all of these different people, we could be here a while. And they're not that interesting. They mostly just involve made up people, again, to distance their own involvement, to say, yeah, I accepted some money, but I really passed on most of the money to this other person who doesn't exist. Now, Andy Hopper, he failed his polygraph. They don't believe his story about this drug dealer he supposedly passed money on to. He confesses after that. He knows the gig is up. The detectives are going to hold on to him. He never requested a lawyer, Justin. I don't know what you think, but I almost feel like he was confident he could talk his way out of this, but it didn't work. So they get the story from Hopper. He's telling Detective McGowan what happened on the evening of October 4th, 1983. He said he knocked on Roseanne's door. He was intending to kill her. He had brought flowers and was going to pose as a flower delivery guy. So Roseanne opened the door. He pulled his gun on her and forced her into the bedroom. That's when he took her clothes off, tied her to the bed, and attempted rape. Now, she started to get free, so he covered her face with a pillow and shot her. Now, according to him, the son, Peter Jr., never left his bedroom while he was there. And of course, he fled the scene after he attempted to kill her, which she did end up dying, obviously, but they charged him with capital murder. They were looking at the death penalty for him. Now, we know that Roseanne Galunis was murdered because Joy wanted her eliminated, but according to all the interviews and the story they've got, they think that there were about five people she wanted killed.
I mean, we know of at least two, Roseanne and Larry, so three more is not a leap.
Chris Ehler died in a car accident on the freeway. This was on December 26th, 1989.
Yeah, I mean, this obviously caused way more turmoil between Joy and Larry. They're arguing over where to bury him. This is just causing way more conflict. But Joy has other troubles in life. May 1990, her trial was scheduled to begin, but she ends up fleeing the country with a friend named Mike Wilson.
That's not his only trouble either. I mean, he's fleeing the country with someone who's on trial for murder, and he was already facing charges for a conspiracy to distribute 46 pounds of cocaine.
I guess at first they get to Canada, but the police will lose her trail at that point.
So there's an international manhunt. She's free for what, 10 months?
She's able to evade police, but she doesn't stay put in Canada.
They catch up to Mike Wilson first. They found him in a hotel room in Canada at the Delta Inn in Vancouver. And they said, "Where's Joy?" And he said, "She left me." She not only dumped him, but she took most of the money that they had with them. So according to Mike, she had $340,000 with her, and he had $100.
Oh, jeez. Left him high and dry.
Now, of course, Wilson says, "I was planning to turn myself in, but you guys found me first."
Trying to get a little sympathy there.
I think he was. I mean, he also goes on to say that he was in love with Joy, but, you know, once she left him, that was it.
Now, Joy is going from Canada to Mexico, back to the United States, back to Mexico. And then she leaves the continent altogether and heads over to Europe.
Yeah, she goes to Germany and France, and she uses a fake name, Elizabeth Sharp. Now, she has help because Jody Packer is helping her from afar. She ends up getting an apartment, but 2 weeks before she can move into that apartment, a French inspector knocked on her door. And it's because they want to talk about an accident she had had in a rental car.
She felt like if she had stuck around, the police would have looked at her ID, her passport, saw that it was fake, and taken her into custody.
So she just left it on the side of a road.
but it's a rental car in her name or her fake name with an address. So it doesn't take much for them to track her down.
No, there's an international warrant for her arrest. They figure it out. But of course, she's saying, oh no, this is a big mistake. But they have something that will dispute that. They have fingerprints from Joy Davis Ayler. And once they compare her fingerprint to the print that they had, there's no doubt they have the right person. So it's in March 1991 when detectives in America, they get that call that they've been waiting on.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
So Joy, obviously not happy to be caught. And before she can be transferred, she's put inside a French prison where she had hidden a razor blade in her clothing and she attempted suicide.
But this wasn't successful. This could get her more charges for evading arrest.
Now, in order to get her from France to the United States, the U.S. authorities have to make a deal. Because France doesn't recognize the death penalty. They will not extradite somebody knowing that they could be put to death. So they have to remove the death penalty aspect of the case, of the sentence, in exchange to get her sent back to the United States. So the United States gets Joy back. She goes on trial in August of 1994. By this time, she's 45 years old. The prosecution, Justin, they have a pretty good case, do they not? They have confessions. They have a pretty good timeline. They have the motives. They have her fleeing the country. There's so much here that it looks like guilty all day long.
Yeah, I think the hardest part of this case is explaining it all to a jury and getting them to understand it and understand her involvement.
Right, because it deals with herself. Then you have Bill Garland. You have the auto mechanic, you have the other guy. There are different people involved in the case, but they're all working beneath Joy. Joy, who it seemed like after she left Larry, she started treating these other guys pretty badly. Well, that came back to bite her because both Jody Packer and Mike Wilson testified for the prosecution.
Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't they?
Now, what can Joy do here in this situation? I mean, obviously, this looks really bad. She's pleading not guilty here, but what can they do to try and spare her from this?
They're playing damage control as they always do. They introduce testimony to show that Larry was abusive and having affairs on her to get the jury to sympathize with her situation. They show that Larry had taken away all of her money once the separation happened, leaving her and her son, Chris, pretty much out in the cold. And they try to paint a picture that Roseanne was a threat to Joy's livelihood because of this. So they're trying to say that she had to kill Roseanne. She interpreted all of this as Roseanne's fault because she was going to be homeless with her son because of her.
I think the reason why this doesn't work is because she hires people to murder her rival. You know, you can't paint this guy as the evil abuser and this and that, and then say, and that's why she killed his girlfriend.
The timeline of it, she was murdered after a lot of this had already gone down. Then Larry's life had an attempt well after that. Her livelihood had already been taken from her. So this is revenge now, not necessity.
The jury deliberated for all of 2 hours. August 18th, 1994, Joy was found guilty of capital murder. She got a sentence of life in prison with the possibility of parole. This is surprising. You know, the prosecutors, the police, they were looking at this case thinking she deserves the death penalty. Well, that had to be taken off the table. But now she could be freed at some point. And she had already fled the country before. What's stopping her to flee to another country when she's on parole, if she makes parole at some point?
Absolutely. This case got blown up in the media and La Diabolique de Dallas, or the devilish woman from Dallas, is what the French press labeled Joy as. Obviously, people were not happy with some of these outcomes.
So that's where the case rested. But since then, Justin, one of the outstanding questions was Carol giving the Richardson Police Department the whole truth? They had suspected early on that she was really there because of the reward. That reward was $25,000, and she didn't get it. She had also hoped to get put in witness protection,
which they didn't feel the need to do either, right?
No.
She didn't show a clear and present danger for her life. She didn't exactly give them information that led to Joy's arrest. If somebody in Germany or France had said, hey, there's Joy, and that led to the arrest, that person's more prone to get $25,000. But Carol, she was pivotal in the case, but I think she was giving only enough information to point them in the right direction while protecting herself and convoluting the entire situation with weird lies and made up people.
Carol Davis, aka Carol Garland, did serve a short amount of time in prison. She later divorced Bill Garland. Jody Packer and Mike Wilson, because of their testimony, they got lighter sentences. Jody Packer served time in prison. Mike Wilson served 15 years and actually appealed that conviction and was released in 1993. Bill Garland pled guilty and got 30 years. Now, Andy Hopper, the killer, was put to death on March 8th, 2005 by lethal injection. And his final words were, I have made a lot of mistakes in my life. The things I did changed so many lives. I can't take it back. It was an atrocity. I am sorry. I beg your forgiveness. I know I am not worthy of it. He then told his parents he loved them and thanked them. Where is Joy at, Justin?
Well, she got her most recent parole review, December 2017. It was denied. Her next parole review is December 2022. So that'd be next year.
The denial reason was the record indicates the instant offense has elements of brutality, violence, assaultive behavior, or conscious selection of victims' vulnerability, indicating a conscious disregard for the lives, safety, or property of others such that the offender poses a continuing threat to public safety. I personally think they could have shortened this up by saying the offender poses a continuing threat to public safety.
She literally planned two murders. That's two first-degree murders, hiring people to do her dirty work. If she were to be let out, who's her next target? Larry and Peter are both out there. Anyone that's turned on her that might be free by the time she gets out, well, she'll probably live the rest of her sentence out in prison.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.